Welcome to episode 63 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Borzeski. Jack has the week off, but Jeff is with us again. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Eric.
We're starting off and mostly talking about the U.S. Women's Open this week. Christy Kerr played a final round 1-under par, much like Angel Cabrera in the Men's Open, a final round 1-under par 70 to capture the U.S. Women's Open. Started the day tied for the lead and beat Lorena Ochoa and Morgan Preslow, who were was also in the threesome. It was a week of many weather delays, but certainly a great final round by Christy Kerr to win the U.S. Women's Open.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a great round from her, and unfortunately for the other two gals, the only round in the final pairing that really kind of came out on the good end of things. So she played solid right down the stretch. Unfortunately, as I said, for the other gals, not so much.
Right. We'll talk about them in a bit, but it was interesting. Johnny Miller kept bragging up Lorena Ochoa, and he kept making these funny comments about Christy Kerr, saying things like, funny things happen when you're in the lead in the U.S. Open on Sunday, and Lorena's trying to catch up, not, you know, Christy's trying to hold on, or, you know, some odd comments there, I thought, because Christy Kerr has won many events, of course. Of course, Lorena has as well, but neither of them have won a major. Christy was the hot putter, and Lorena had some issues. Some of those issues, I guess we'll move on to talking about Lorena, but certainly not to take away anything from Christy Kerr, because she played good golf all week and was battling her swing and really talked about having to go through the process, which, you know, they made the comment, I think Dottie Pepper did, that when you're going through a process because you're not hitting shots as well, you don't get overconfident, you don't get cocky, you know, you just stick to your routine and try to hit shots, and it seemed to work for her. So, and certainly on the putting green, she did well there.
No, I was just gonna say, I think it really indicated that she was able to stay in the process, and she was so focused all the way down to that final putt. You look at the last three holes in particular, she just was the person to get it done, and you could really see her focus, and that she did stay in the moment, and every shot, no great shots. I don't know if I saw, although her driving was just spot on,
right.
You know, right into the green. She didn't put it close or anything, but she just put it in the right position every time and seemed to be able to kind of pull it out.
Her good shots were all putts. Morgan Preslow had many bad shots. Failed to get up and down on the, I think it was the 15th hole, the par 5, from right in front of the green for a birdie. Fell apart in the last 5 or 6 holes, really. Even double bogeying, then crying again. the 18th hole.
She chipped
it over the green into a bunker and then failed to get up and down from the bunker for 5. And then Lorena Ochoa, who a couple years ago in Cherry Hills yanked the ball way left, did so again twice at the par 5. She put a ball in the trees, tried to cut the corner a bit, put a ball in the trees. She punched out into the pine straw across the fairway. She yanked it into a couple bunkers. On 17, she did, and then on 18, she flared one way right. Really a bad day. Did she choke, or was it, again, bad swings? She has a tendency to go left again when she's under pressure, it seems.
Yeah, we had a chance to look at her swing kind of in slow motion, and there were some comments there that she got a little loose in the final round, and we've seen that before. You know, she moves around a lot in her swing anyway. You see a lot of these gals, their heads kind of bend around. She reminds me of
Tourette syndrome in the neck there.
Yeah, she reminds me of Natalie Gulbis a little bit. You know, she kind of snaps her head back, and that was a really exaggerated move, particularly right out of the bunker there. You know, you think that all that extra movement, it just was indicated more pressure. That in the final round, as she's coming down the stretch, for some reason, she tends to get a little bit loose, and all that extra movement results in those left shots, it seems.
She's certainly young enough to get some, she has more time to win these things, but she is the number one player. She had a chance. I mean, a 69 or a 70 would have gotten it done, and she failed to do that. So, you know, made a great up and down on the 18th for par, but basically by that time, all that did was force Christy Kerr not to four putt. So, not a big deal there.
Right.
Christy, you know, not exactly young, but, you know, she's about 30, so 29 or 30. So, good to see her get a major. Perhaps one of the best. They were talking about her and Lorena being the two best female golfers without a major. So now there's just one, and it's without a doubt Lorena Ochoa. So one more chance this year. Of course, Michelle Wee was at the U.S. freaking Open, in her words, and withdrew in the middle of the second round. She was 6 over after 9 holes, really not in danger. It wasn't like the rule of 88 thing. Nothing was going on there. It's just her wrist was hurt. Not much to say. I don't have much to say about this. Do you have much to add? I just wish maybe she hadn't played, or if it's that big a problem.
Yeah, well, I missed the reason at first. I didn't know exactly why she was withdrawing. So I, you know, of course, I was really interested to find out, was it because of her score or what exactly happened? Well, obviously, a wrist injury there. You know, I think for a lot of people, this is just more of the same. And I think it indicates what we've been saying here for a while, that she needs to take a break, take some time off, come back in 2008, rest up, get that wrist healed so that when she comes back, she can play with confidence. Play up to her potential. I mean, of course, we wish her the best. I mean, on a personal level, I think, man, I feel bad for the gal because obviously this media storm has been following her for a long time. A lot of potential starting out at the beginning. But, not a whole lot we can say other than I hope she takes a break.
Get well when you do take that break. Go to school. Have fun. And then finally here, Alexis Thompson. I read some discussion. She's a 12-year-old that qualified. I read some discussion on whether or not we should allow 12-year-olds to qualify and play in things like U.S. Women's Open. Given the spate of young female tennis players that have, you know, gone on to bad things and early burnouts and, you know, things like that. You know, I don't know that a 12-year-old is equipped to handle the media pressure and the spotlight. It's the opinion of some. You know, I'm of the opinion, hey, if you qualify, you qualify. And it's the parents' decision at that point to, you know, help their kid or decide that their kid doesn't need that pressure or can't deal with it, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm going to take the opposite view as you have done, that I think, especially in golf, this is a different game. And so long as a player like Alexis Thompson at 12 years old can take a different route than Michelle Wee did, I mean, as long as we're not giving girls like this $5-10 million to put a Nike swoosh on their hat, I mean, as long as she can come in there as an amateur, qualify to play, me and a friend of mine were saying that now, in women's golf, this is a lot different. You're not going to see any 12-year-old boys playing in the U.S. Open. So this is an anomaly, I think.
And hey, it was a good story, and now she can go back to, you know, maybe a once-in-a-lifetime thing for her. Maybe
exactly.
Not. Maybe she'll get better.
Well, this is in the line, for me, of Bobby Jones, and golf has a long line of amateur players there, so I think it's a great story, and she came in, and as you said, might be just the highlight of her life, and who knows if she goes on to play some more.
All right, well, we will be going on to talk some more right after this message from Tyler, so stay tuned.
I'm working on posting more red numbers.
I'm working on the fundamentals.
Firing right at the target.
Winning my first major.
Pulling out.
Winning in my hometown,
Augusta, Georgia.
Being a winner and a mom.
Working on my pivot.
My short game.
Going lower.
I'm just working on sticking to my game plan.
Ball position and alignment.
What I'm going to wear tomorrow.
Nice shirt.
Just trying to get better every day.
Even the world's best want to be better. That's why there's the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back. In our forum topic of the week, we're tackling the subject of Tiger Woods and the PGA Tour's failure to promote the lesser knowns. One of our forum members brought up this whole idea that if Tiger Woods is in contention, the casual golf fan watches. If not, they don't care. And so Tiger Woods, of course, is in the line of Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky, Dale Earnhardt, big name, someone that people are going to pay attention to, somebody that people are going to pay attention to whether or not they're a golf fan. So where I would say that...
Well, is it the PGA Tour that's failing to promote him, or just the general media?
Yeah, well, I think it's a case of the general media, because as I think of the PGA Tour, I don't think that they have failed to promote other players. I think they have a great interest in a lot of people, but, you know, the only person that you're going to see on ESPN is Tiger Woods and maybe Phil Mickelson, unless it's the Masters of the U.S. Open.
Right. So, you know, I do wish... See, this is the problem where the casual golf fan really only wants to see Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson or somebody like that. The advanced golf fan or the, you know, the guys like us that are really into it and stuff, we do more, but it's on our own. We research things. We find these things out about people. We read books. We read magazines. We find this stuff out. So I don't know that there's necessarily a problem, because the information is certainly out there if you want to go look for it. You know, I mean, ratings play into it. You know, TV networks and stuff have to do what makes sense for them, for their business. And oftentimes that's showing Tiger Woods. So
yeah, well,
I wish we knew more about some of the lesser known players. But if I want to know more about Chris Couch or Ted Purdy or, you know, whoever, Brian Bateman, I can go find that out. So,
well, it indicates to me just how big Tiger Woods is as a commodity and as a player. I mean, he's an anomaly. He's the best player of his generation by a long shot. And if I could just make a shameless plug for my Trap 5 that I wrote, we had some conversation going about just this thing, that Tiger Woods has become somewhat of a bigger than his own name, but I think, you know, my point was that I think his sticks play speak for themselves, and so Tiger Woods obviously is watched by many people outside of golf, and that's something I think we can all appreciate, that he brings more attention to the sport, and perhaps some of those casual fans are going to be drawn in to enjoy some of these other players as they see Tiger play.
Right, and the point's been made that, you know, you don't necessarily have to understand golf to understand when a player makes a fist pump. He obviously did something good, and that's exciting, so excitement kind of has no language. You don't need to be a golf fan to appreciate that. And to Tiger's credit, for good and bad, he shows his emotions more than some of the other PGA Tour players out there. I don't know that a lot of people really care to know about a lot of PGA Tour players because they're all boring automatons who don't seem to have any emotion. Tiger will swear on the golf course. Tiger will fist pump on a golf course. You know, I mean, you know what he's thinking.
Well, the funny thing to me is that people will say those same words about Tiger Woods. Oh, he's just a machine. You know, he gets in front of a microphone and tells you what you want to hear and says a lot but doesn't really say anything. But actually, you know, it is true that he's very expressive.
Right.
And there are a few guys on the PGA Tour who are very expressive, and we enjoy watching them play. Right. And Tiger happens to be one of them.
So we'll be right back after this message again. Stay tuned.
I'm working on shortening my swing.
Holding up more trophies.
Making the next Ryder Cup team.
Posting more low numbers.
Making everything I look at.
Getting the club more in line at the top.
Drawing the ball.
Working on my pivot.
Being more consistent.
More wins.
More wins.
More wins.
More wins.
More majors.
Just trying to get better.
Working on beating this guy.
Working on a whole lot of things.
Even the world's best want to be better. That's why there's the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back. The PGA Tour, of course, played this week at the Buick Classic. There was a four-man playoff lined up, I believe, before Brian Bateman made a 12-foot birdie putt on the 72nd hole to claim the victory outright. His first PGA Tour victory in, I think, 151 PGA Tour events, so his first victory. I was 204th on the money list in his sixth year, so kind of takes a jump up and certainly secures a two-year exemption. Good golf, but frankly, I was watching mostly the Women's Open.
Yeah, well, I missed the winning putt over on the PGA Tour because I was watching the U.S. Women's Open too, but again, I think this is a great story for the PGA, and it's nice to see a guy, you know, knock a putt down to win it. And so that's nice that someone didn't fall into the victory, but he stepped up and knocked that putt in.
Jason Gore perhaps on the road back, shooting a final round 67 to tie for second. And Justin Leonard, a guy who we haven't heard much from lately either, shooting again also a 67. Woody Austin, a winner this year, shooting a 69, all finished tied for second. Tim Fear kind of failed to do much on the weekend, finished in a tie for two shots behind, so a tie for fifth or so, along with Scott Verplank. So not much. People are expecting a little more from Jim Furyk, especially after he was leading going into Saturday. So next story here is Tiger and Phil will play in D.C. this week at the AT&T National, of course, benefiting Tiger Woods Foundation. Jim Furyk and Adam Scott are going to play. I believe potentially Vijay Singh may be there, but I'm not sure. I mean, he seems to play more weeks than he takes off, so the odds are that he'd be there. But
yeah, earlier this season, I think we had said, the media had said that Phil Mickelson was not going to play in this event.
Right.
So, of course, this kind of runs contrary to what we had heard at the beginning of the year. And good to see him in there. Some of the big names back in after the U.S. Open. So.
Hopefully his wrist is good. And it makes sense for a lot of these players because there's going to be a major at Congressional in the near future. So it makes sense for some of these players to perhaps get in the field and play Congressional a few times in their competitive conditions. But good to see Tiger Woods, of course, coming off the birth of his first child, Sam Alexis. So he'll be back, obviously. If he's going to play in this event, he'll play in the British Open, obviously. So
yeah, and I think it benefits players like Phil Mickelson to get in there. Obviously, as you mentioned, the golf course is one that they're going to look forward to playing a big event on. But also, you know, some bigger names are going to be there. And for me, you know, the event has Tiger's name attached to it, but some big names are going to be there. So I think the best players want to compete on the biggest stage. So this is going to be one of the biggest stages, I think.
All right, and our last story here. Perhaps next to last, we may see. It's called the USGA Skirted Dilemma at US Open, and it talked about whether or not if there had been a playoff, if they would have delayed the playoff so that Tiger Woods could have his child, you know, or be with Elin, his wife, while she had the child. Obviously, he's not going to have the child. It talks about whether or not the USGA would actually delay the playoff, which starts, I believe, Mondays at 11 a.m., I believe, or so, is when they're scheduled. But if Tiger Woods had not been able to be there, and not because he didn't want to, but because of a legitimate reason, you know, the birth of his first child, if they would delay the playoff until, I don't know when, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, next month, who knows? It also talks about whether or not, you know, the USGA faced the same situation in 1999 when Phil Mickelson was expecting his first child with his wife, Amy. And she delivered on the Monday after as well. So this is twice now that the USGA has faced this possibility. They still don't seem to have a plan. They seem to say, hey, at least we've gotten lucky twice.
Yeah.
Should a playoff be delayed for something like this?
If the way that the USGA sets up their golf tournaments is any indication of what they would do in this situation, I think you've got to say that they're going to go ahead with it. A couple of things that stick out in this story for me. Number one, vindication for Phil Mickelson. I mean, he's taken a lot of heat for that, you know, beeper that he wore on his belt and saying that he was going to leave right away. Well, Tiger says the same thing. So, hey, you know, guys are going to leave to support their wife, of course, and to welcome their child. So that's definitely one thing. And then I think also if in the case that this would happen, this would be a huge story. And so you've got to think that the USGA should be thinking ahead, because if Tiger Woods misses a playoff, that's going to go down in golf history as one of the biggest stories in the history of the game.
And the point was made too that if there's a two-man playoff, what pro would want to win by default like that? I mean, it's almost like the Bob Golby winning the Masters because DiVincenzo wrote, you know, the wrong number and the whole "what a stupid I am" thing. You know, Bob Golby would have been in the playoffs, so I mean, at best he would have had at least about a 50-50 shot to win the Masters legitimately.
Right.
Instead, he won by a kind of a quirk. So what guy would really want to win the U.S. Open by his opponent not showing up so he could be with his kid?
Uh-huh.
It almost pushed pressure on that guy to say, no, I want to either win or lose it out, you know, properly.
Right. So, yeah, they made the suggestion that maybe the rest of the guys would say, hey, we're going to force the USGA's hand and say we're not going to be there either until our other opponent can be there. And that would be interesting.
So it's an interesting discussion. I certainly hope the USGA comes up with a policy for it and tells everyone, obviously, it beforehand, so it doesn't seem like they're favoring one player or not, before it happens again. So
yeah.
Hopefully. Of course, Tiger Woods just hopes he wins the next 20 US Opens by 10 shots, so they're just going to worry about a playoff.
That's right.
All right, so we have time for this last story. It talks about RNA setting up one of the courses for qualifying for the British Open, and they actually had a pin that was in such a bad spot that people 5-putted, one guy 4-putted from 2 feet. They actually made 8 players. They recut the hole in a different location, and they actually made 8 players replay the hole. two players got a worse score their second time, but that's the score that had to count.
We had a fellow by the name of Ricardo Gonzalez from Argentina 5-putt.
Richard Bland made birdie the first time around, par at the second time, so he went from 72 to 73. Frederick Anderson Head was most affected. He parred on his first attempt, but double bogeyed on the second attempt to go from a 66 to a 68. So I don't know if the hole was that badly set up if he had a par and a birdie out of 8 players.
Yeah, well, it might have just been the luck of the draw. They might have just hit their putt perfectly. Again, that's quite a penalty. I mean, if you miss the hole and it runs away from you,
right.
That sounds like the U.S. Open, actually.
And Shinnecock, where they had that funny green. So, anyway, just a point that the USGA, or sorry, the RNA doesn't even learn from the USGA's mistakes. So, yikes. But hey, people got a redo. So, there's no redos in golf.
All right.
Unless you're qualifying for the British Open, of all things.
Apparently.
The world's oldest championship allows redos. Oh, well. What have we come to? We have come to the end of episode 63 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you again by thesandtrap.com. Check out our show notes every Wednesday online, or check out our forum at thesandtrap.com/forum, where you may create next week's forum topic of the week. This is Eric Proseski for Desmond saying talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Okay, see you next time.